With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live.
Lembit Opik.
You're listening to Lembit Opik on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembit Opik Show. 4 hours of news and comments on what amounts to Sunday morning and afternoon in the UK and evening, of course, in Australia. Wherever you are, I'm really pleased you've made time to join us on what I hope is a thoughtful, factual, and also opinion-led program where you get all of those, but we don't mix up fact and opinion. My only request, as I always say, is that you think for yourself. If that's what you want, then you've come to the right place. We just had a very interesting debate about nostalgia, its nature, whether things really were better in the past and whether they're getting worse for the present and the future. Some of your comments, let me just go through them. First of all, Holly, I mentioned the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang in a country called Bulgaria, by the way. I wonder what country that was based on in the Soviet days. Holly says there are still child catchers. Okay, thanks for that ominous warning there. Other comments here. A very interesting one here, actually, from Wee Fat Chug says, a lady named Von Blackwood revealed that the Crown actually publishes profits from trafficking in yearly accounts. Not really sure what you mean by that. And that might be something for the future, a chat point, which is pretty interesting. Moving right down, we've got a lot of discussion about the past and nostalgia and so forth. I can't go through all of them, but please do and have a look at them yourselves. But the one of the most interesting ones is from Red. $1,900 is worth today less than 6 cents. My dad earned £1.87.5 per week in his first job. Humans will never get ahead whilst we're forced to use the corrupt Rothschild banks. I'm not sure if that's about banking or nostalgia, but I was in a taxi yesterday and I thought, oh, it's gone up so much. Well, that's perhaps because I measure everything according to the price that it used to be. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Lots more comments about nostalgia there as well. There was one particularly lovely comment I can't see now. I won't waste time. But when I find it, I will read it out to you. Do keep your calls and comments coming. I think there's a case for me spending a whole hour with somebody who's thought about or written about nostalgia and work out what the psychology of that is and whether that's used by politicians to try to bring back the past to make America great again, perhaps. Maybe that's what that's about as well. But do keep your calls and comments coming about that. Just one about reform, which is the party I was discussing with my former guest, Charlie Downs. How can they be reform when they are a continuation of the status quo? Okay, good point. I'm not going to try to answer that. I'll just read it out and see what you think. James adds, every politician should be made to disclose whether or not they are a Freemason or if they are associated with any other secret society. I once went to a Freemason's party. I'm not a Freemason. And I realized that they really do work together. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I haven't got the time to go into that debate now. But of course, that could mean that there is a kind of uni party if Freemasons and both sides work together. I don't know how it works exactly. Do keep your calls and comments coming. It's fascinating what you've put down there. In the next hour, at the beginning, I want to talk about the curious case of the Icelandic volcano. Why? Because it's spewing out all kinds of stuff. Could it be that nature generates carbon dioxide? Da, da, da. Answer yes, but how much? And why is it that we dolefully see the mainstream media reporting this volcano as if it's evil, as if it's selfishly eating up human habitations and it has no right to do so? I think to feel that way, you have to know first the derivation of where Iceland came from in the first place. I'll cover that in about an hour. I don't want to do it now. And it's timely because we'll have Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch, an organization which tries to take a rational approach towards all of these climate debate issues. So you've got that to look forward to. A rant about volcanism, which has nothing to do with Star Trek and everything to do with lava coming out of the ground. But joining me next is somebody easily as hot as lava itself. He is Steve Morris from the Workers of England Union. What's that about? You're going to find out now. They've been active and busy and meeting in the north of England. We're going to find out a little bit about Stephen, why he's involved in unionism. What is it? What is it to be in a union? Is it a good or a bad thing? Often painted in a negative light in the 1980s. What are they about? Then we'll talk about how he sees the current political situation in the UK and beyond, and what we, in his view, can do about that. All of that with me, Lemba Topic, right here on TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Stephen Morris joins us now. Welcome to today's News Talk. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Lembit. How are you?
Really well. Really pleased to see you. You're in the north of England. Where are you and why?
Well, we're currently at Normanton Park in the Rutland area. We're just having an extraordinary general meeting, which each year, because we're a regulated trade union, we do have to submit our accounts both to the regulator and to the membership. And that's what we've been doing today. We've done that this morning. There's not a lot of discussion about it. The accountants have signed it all off and we're still good to go.
Extraordinary general meeting makes it sound like a crisis. Is it just a phrase?
No.
You're not in trouble, are you?
No, what it was, we should have submitted them in December, but our auditor was actually on holiday in Australia, funny enough. And so it got delayed. So the earliest point we could do then to arrange it was today in March. So rather than it being for the AGM, we had to call an extra meeting just for it. But that's only because the auditor was in Australia.
It's a very honest way of describing it. One time, Richard Curtis, who's a very, very big man when it comes to analysing political behaviour, and he's always on the television during elections. He phoned me up once, the day after a vote, and he said, I didn't know him well then, I know him well now. He said, Mr. Opik, you're a member of Parliament. I noticed that you voted yes and no on the vote last night. Were you making a point of principle indicating that you had issues with both sides? And how do you feel about your decision? I went, no, I just messed it up. and that's how we started being friends, because he respected my honesty. I'd actually voted no. And then the party whip, the person who's telling me how to vote, said, what are you doing, Lambert? Go through there. So I had to go the other way to negate my own vote. Sorry, Stephen, you're going to say.
Yeah. No, it's just one of those things. You've just got to be honest with people, haven't you? You know, if it's something, like I say, they were supposed to be done first weekend in December, but the guy was on holiday and he's the chief auditor. He's the only one who can sign it off. And unfortunately, he was away. So not a lot we can do about it, really. Apart from telling him not to take holidays in Australia.
Oh, well, don't say that. You're going to turn off half of our audience if you say that. I actually like Australia so much. I lived in the jungle there once for a show. An ex-MP, get me out of here. That's the celebrity, actually. Anyway, enough of me. Let's talk about what the Workers of England Union are all about. And then after the break in a few minutes, we'll talk about the issues that you think face the Workers of England. So why was it formed?
It was formed because there was actually no collective voice for actual England. People will hear about the TUC as an example. Well, at the time, there was around 160 trade unions, but only 48 affiliate to the TUC. And obviously, they are really a political organisation. But there was no English TUC and no English designated trade union. So people like the other unions, they combined their membership, as in the UK and Ireland. So you've got a British TUC, Scottish, Welsh, and Northern Ireland actually goes into the whole of Ireland TUC. So England as a whole was being kind of ignored. And we found this out very early on with a few cases. As an example, when Scotland was going for their referendum, the British government decided to shut down shipbuilding down on the south coast of England and move it to Glasgow. You know, kind of a little back way bribe to keep them in the union. Well, that affected England. The other trade unions didn't mind because they still had membership in both camps, you know, and there was very few spoke out. In fact, the only person who did speak out at the time was the late Bob Crowe of the RMT. And he pointed out that the British government at the time was procuring two supply vessels to be built in South Korea. And he said, actually, if you put a gun on the front of it, it becomes a military vehicle, and therefore it can be built in the UK. And that was to try and get around the EU regulations at the time. And so we've seen job losses to the detriment of England, and the other unions and the British government have not really been focused on England. So we reformed because of that, and that's why we're dedicated to the workers of England, and we represent anybody who works in England. Although we have represented people in Wales, we've got plenty of members in Wales, and over the last few years we've expanded to Scotland. For a lot of your international viewers, they won't be aware that the UK, the actual laws in the UK are split up. So you have the laws of England and Wales, you have the laws of Scotland, and you have the laws of Northern Ireland. They are slightly different. And so that's why we've always concentrated on England and Wales. So we started to push forward and represent on that. We're not politically affiliated to any trade union. And that's one of the things that I think the memberships have got rather put off by, because people are seeing that the unions are no, more now as a political organisation affiliated to one political party rather than representing the members on their individual issue. So our main, say, selling point is we don't use workplace reps, because workplace reps can have a conflict of interest. Either they have a gripe against the company and use your case to have a go, or they may get the cushy number, the cushy shifts, and don't want to rock the boat. Where our representatives, they're completely independent. They go in, their only concern is the member. But we also look at both sides, because a lot of our reps have actually been in previous management and that. So we can see both sides of the coin. It's not just a case of going in, banging on the table, demanding stuff. We more have a professional mediator and representative. You know, what's the point of going in with a massive pay rise on a company that financially can't sustain it, and within two or three years it's gone? You know, you've got to look at the long-term viability, both of the employer and retaining the employee, because obviously experience works really well with employers. So we were formed because of that. We've been growing steadily since we were formed in 2009. Originally it was a limited company, but when we became a regulated trade union in 2012, we had to close that limited company because you can't keep both. And we've been operating for, say, the last 12 years as a regulated union. We really took off in 2020. We was the only trade union that was representing people in the care sector who didn't want to take the COVID vaccine or wear the mask for health reasons. The other trade unions, and we've got one in particular who put it in writing that they wouldn't represent somebody because it was against Labour Party policy. You know, so quite clearly they weren't interested in the member, just party politics. And it was absolutely quite astonishing, because the member who came to us said they'd been a member of that union for 15 years and never used them once, but when they didn't need it to. And they actually had a valid reason for not wearing the mask, because they suffered from asthma. So that's when we really took off. Our membership escalated massively. So it peaked at around 10,500. And after the mandate was dropped, which was good, it dropped back a little bit. So we're just under 9,000 members now. Still going up steadily now as more and more people come to know us. And they like what we do. You know, we're that trade union where we just look after the member. And that to me, that's why membership has been drastically dropping in trade unions over the decades. You know, people like Unite will say, oh, they're the largest union. Well, they're the largest union because they've amalgamated a load of other unions to keep themselves in that position. The membership generally has been dropping in them, and same with the others. So, yeah, there is a big issue, and that's how we were formed. And we were the only trade union pushing the cases for people who, for health reasons or philosophical reasons, could not take the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. And I'll use the word vaccine loosely, because it was actually a child drug at the time. Or they couldn't wear the mask, which... before we go into some other cases that we've recently run, we was pushing all the issues at the time. Many people will be aware that there was a lot of issues around what the mainstream media wasn't reporting. and they were looking at alternative media. For us, being a regulated trade union, we had to follow a very fine line on what we was putting out. So everything we put out, even though we got called conspiracy theories and OCATs, was actually issues the government had published themselves. You know, so all the information was there. You just had to find it, you know, like mass don't stop airborne aerosols. That was published on the Health and Safety Executive website. That was already there. The documentation was already there. And when it came to the COVID jabs, about it, we quoted the government spokesperson who said, it doesn't stop you getting it, doesn't stop you transmitting it, only reduces the effects if it actually works. And we were quoting things from the Yellow Card reporting. So we were the only union that was actually representing people on core issues at the time that affect not just their philosophical belief, but their health, the and being called for it. But we were using government stuff. You know,
that's quite hold that thought. I want to get really quite deep into this because that's what's really interested me, Stephen, about the union. You took a stand to defend workers, which ended up looking like an intensely political stand. Many viewers and many of us working at today's News Talk are motivated by the fact that our freedoms have been eroded. And in this example, decisions about what you put in your body have been politicized. The state thinks it can get into your body through an injection. Mm-hmm. I want to talk more about that because that sets you slightly apart from the other unions, I think. So you're listening to Steve Morris from the Workers of England Union. I'm going to go into two areas, the question of vaccination and the question of masks, assess cases for why I think this union is quite an interesting alternative to many of the other ones. I should also stress that you can make your points, you can put your questions in as well. You're creating a lot of debate, actually, in the TNT Radio.live chat. So we'll come back to Stephen in a minute. You're listening to Lembotopic. This is TNT. See you in a minute.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show, which is on a Sunday morning and early afternoon, if you happen to be in the UK. It's all evening in Australia. Wherever you are, thank you for being with me. Very interested to be with my guest, Stephen Morris, who's just acted with a wonderful eruditeness in describing why the Workers of England Union is necessary. I'm going to ask him one question about the union itself before we go into two examples about COVID and how that union seems to have taken a rather different approach to other unions in the country. Just one question here. Lex is saying two Lembits on screen. Lex, you need to go to Specsavers, I would say, because I'm just meant to be here once. Stephen, you never guess who I bumped into Specsavers yesterday.
Well, if you're bumping into people, you need to get your glasses checked, don't you?
Really? That's right. I bumped into everybody. Anyway, sorry. You ruined that joke. I never want you to be on my audience when I'm telling gags. That's why I gave up professional stand-up, by the way. It's easier here because if people don't laugh, you have to pretend it was a serious point. You can't do that if you're in the comedy club. The question I've got for you before you go into the details is this. It seems to me that you took an objective decision about masks and COVID injections, which other unions didn't. I want to actually talk about why you took those decisions now. Why was it that you were willing to challenge the mask edict, which I would say I just think was complete window dressing? I don't think the masks made any difference at all. Yesterday in the TNT chat, somebody actually said stopping a virus with a mask is like trying to stop a virus with chainmail. It just doesn't work. But why were you willing to fearlessly go somewhere that other unions simply imploded on and just went along with the received establishment view?
Well, there's two points to it, really. One, with my father, when he was in his 30s, he had a new drug for a chest infection, and it gave him asthma, which he suffered with then for next 30 years, and he died of asthma attack, so it eventually killed him. So my family have an issue with anything to do with experimental drugs unless they've got a proper track record of trial, and, you know, everybody knows the possible adverse effects. So there was that thing that threw it. But it comes down to actually basics, very issued of basic for a trade union. Okay, if an employer is asking you to do something, where's the risk assessment? Right, they're asking you to put a mask on, where's the risk assessment? And when you check out the risk assessment, everything showed that the mask does not stop airborne aerosols. You know, it was on the Health and Safety Executive website that masks do not stop airborne aerosols. Technical data for masks shows they do not stop viruses. They're there to stop blood splat and possible bacteria. So the issue was why are they doing that? So employees who came to us and said, look, we never said we you have to wear it or you're not. We've had other unions, even health and safety reps, trying to force people to wear it. But we said, right, what's the basic risk assessment? Right, the risk assessment says this doesn't do what they're being told to do, but it does have a negative effect on the health of the wearer. So therefore, we will represent them. And they had, if they may have asthma or other respiratory issues, we need to represent them. And the same was with the vaccine. There was no evidence that the vaccine actually did stop it. And the government's, like I said, the government's own statement at press briefings said it didn't stop you getting it, didn't stop you transmitting it. And it, when you looked at the yellow card reporting system, which was the government's own website for adverse effects, it quite clearly came that there was adverse effects occurring, you know. And we know organisations like the WHO swapped their view on masks very early on. They kept swapping and changing. And the issues on the vaccine was... kept changing. Does it work? Doesn't it? You know, there's no adverse effects. The issue on pregnant ladies or people who wanted to have babies, there was quite clearly early data saying that if they missed their cycles for 2 months, that they needed to seek urgent medical assistance from their GP. It was too late then, you know, because you've already had the vaccine. So all the data was saying, on from a trade union point, on a basic issue on risk assessment and health and safety, you don't wear your mask and you don't take the vaccine, you know. Yet the other trade unions just seemed to throw all this risk assessment out and believed what was coming. They didn't do their own checks. They didn't get the employer to do their own checks.
And this is my issue. Right, a union, I used to be in the National Union of Students, which isn't exactly the same thing, but it was meant to be sticking up for students as a group. 1.5 million students. And I learned that it was meant to stick up for its members, not for the establishment that was pushing our members around. Now, what I don't get is why you pretty much stood alone in the union movement saying, actually, the data says don't wear a mask, don't get a vaccine. And the rest of them just caved in on something which was literally life and death. This really confused me at the time. By the way, I did take 3 vaccines and I bitterly regret it because I had health problems as a result. And so I was foolish to trust the state myself. I don't put myself above the gullibility of or below the gullibility of the others. But I was pushed in. If I'd been in a union, if I'd been in the Workers of England Union, I would have listened to that union saying, don't take the vaccine, don't take the mask and we'll protect you.
Well, it's all about informed consent. That's what it's all about. And even in the COVID inquiry recently, Chris Whitty said about if somebody has an operation, and we posted this, somebody has an operation, the doctors have to tell you what the possible consequences could be. You know, you need an operation to do this, but this could be the adverse effect if nothing goes right and you make the informed decision. Now, we said that at the COVID inquiry, but they weren't telling people about the possible adverse effects on the vaccine. You know, we don't have any issues with people who wanted to take the vaccine, because one of the things we noticed was it was the biggest form of harassment, victimization, and intimidation that had gone on in care homes that anybody's ever known. It was just horrendous what was going on. We was having people telling us, and we were quoting, say, Chris Whitty and Hancock and the others. We were making quotes, and I'll go back to the other one, which was, doesn't stop you getting it, doesn't stop you transmitting it, only reduces the effects. When I quoted that to care home managers, they were saying, what other conspiracy do you have? And I'm like, but I've just quoted the government official at a press briefing, you know, and so we stood out because we were saying to the individual, look, what is your issue, right? What do you need to know? And then it's up to you, you know, and if the employer is not going to follow the right route, then we will represent you. And we've had a couple of recent cases which we kind of supported what we were saying very early on, because our reps were saying a lot of things like the NHS staff and the care home staff tried to hide behind guidance. So the NHS staff would say, we're following NHS England guidance, we're following guidance. And we were saying, guidance is nothing. You've got to follow the law. You've got to follow employment law. And care homes were saying, we've got to follow CQC guidance. Now, in a recent case that we've just recently won in November, where he was unfairly dismissed for not taking the vaccine, the judge has actually come out and confirmed everything that we had been saying for the previous 3 years. You know, he actually states the company did not know the difference between guidance, actual law, secondary legislation, and common law. They didn't know the difference, but they did do, because we told them. You know, so this judgment is quite significant, and it says that guidance has no force in law, which helps us going forward now, because any NHS staff or any care home staff who say we're only following CQC guidance or NHS guidance, it's a case of no, we know it has no force in law, and there's been a clear judgment on that. You know, and this is where the NHS seem to have been a law on itself. They were publishing guidance and not following the law. And that's where we were actually following the health and safety regulations.
I have to say that your lucid and objective description is unlike anything I've heard from any union rep at any level ever before. I knew I had a rough idea where Workers of England Union stood, because I knew you defended some people on the mask issue. But the logical way in which you're describing it seems rare. Indeed, incidentally, you do have some fans. At least one person says that they love your northern accent. How superficial Jake is anyway. That's Fox says, I love his accent, love northern tones. Oh, there we are. Bank it. And
it's proper Lancastrian.
Oh, Lancastrian. So it's West. I know your MP, actually. Very nice chap, to be honest with you. Not your party, I don't think. Maybe things have changed now.
No.
Ed says, just a separate point, is there an association known as the Reform? There's an association known as the Reform Club. Has Reform Party any connection? No, actually, it doesn't. It's a coincidence.
No, we do have issues with the Reform, because obviously Richard Tice did want healthcare workers all to have mandatory vaccinations. And there is no legislation for mandatory vaccinations in England anyway. It just doesn't exist. Right. And obviously, the other point we had was with Nigel Farage wanting Tony Blair as the vaccine czar at the time. And it's like, if you wanted to promote the vaccine, I wouldn't have picked Tony Blair as a vaccine czar, given his track record, you know.
I have to say, that's one of the curious things about Reform UK. In many ways, I find their position very interesting. But when it came to vaccines, they seemed to do what the other unions did. So, well, we must be okay. As I so bitterly regret the day I let them stick that third jab in my arm. I think my body put up with the first two. By the way, I got COVID, or what I'd like to call it, bad flu, before any of the vaccines were even around. So I've got a built-in natural immunity. And yet I felt pushed into getting the vaccines. I was traveling a lot at the time for work, and it was very difficult to not get them. But leaving my situation aside, what you've described there, Steve Morris, seems to set you apart from the entire union movement in the United Kingdom, because you chose a path which put you on a collision course with an authoritarian state that was telling us that we were irresponsible and likely to kill our friends and relatives if we didn't let them put that stuff into our bodies. Did you get heat for that?
Oh, yeah, we got real heat. And we do know, we had the feeling that we were clearly being watched. Because in the early days, we knew what the legislation said. And if you remember, they were all going on about medical exemption. Oh, people can have a medical exemption. Well, them two words never existed in the legislation, right? So the word medical and exemption never existed. And this is what we kept pointing out, even to some judges, we kept pointing out it doesn't exist. What an employee could do is, for a clinical reason, say they didn't want it. Okay, that was one of it. So they only had to say clinical reason. So what we did, we said, okay, we will follow the legislation, and we issued a certificate of exemption on behalf of our members. So they would supply their medical records to a particular rep, and they would then do a certificate. Now, we was issuing them, and some employers accepted them, some didn't. And then not long after, NHS England and the government came out with their certificate. You know, if you want an exemption, you've got to go down the NHS England route. Well, that actually broke people's rights in another way, because one, as was pointed out in the Chopman case, that was only guidance. That was never in the legislation. Ours was. So you didn't have to go the NHS England route. And secondly, it gave you no right of a second opinion. Now, if me or you went to our doctor and we didn't like their opinion, my dentist does it all the time. He reads out that if I don't like his diagnosis, I'm entitled to a second opinion. But the NHS England group didn't give you that right. It completely said, if we say no, it's a no. You'd no right of appeal. And that was wrong. And that was another part of the ruling in the Chopman case from November that said the NHS route was only guidance, and guidance had no force in law. And that's why these cases were quite significant in what we've just recently got. It took a while for them to get through. We did lose a case early on, which was against Barchester. We had a multiple claim against Barchester, which were basically the government's poodles, so to speak, to push it in care homes. However, that is actually going to appeal in June.
It's still going.
Yes, it's still going. It's going to the appeals tribunal. And here's the thing, it gets sifted by a judge before it goes. And the judge has actually said that all our 7 points, including the one on human rights violations, are arguable points, and they've allowed it to proceed on all 7 points. So we're hoping that will tick the box on the human rights issue for everybody. And we've just had one, although it was at the preliminary hearing stage, he's still got his unfair dismissal case to go on, that homeopathy and bodily autonomy has been accepted as a protected characteristic under the Equality Act. And that's a case against West Midlands Ambulance Service. So we've got quite recently, it took a while, but there is a big backlog on these cases, which took a while for these to say, well, hang on, what we've been saying has been correct. We've now got these cases coming through. And the Barchester case, the early case, is one that's ongoing. And in the very early days of the mass, we did win one to do with mass against a car dealership, a load of convoy against Bristol Street Motors, I think it was, and where they were trying to force her to wear a mask. Yet she couldn't wear a mask because she'd previously been sexually assaulted, and cut her face covered, and so therefore it caused traumatic stress to her, you know, and we won that case early on.
But I wish I'd been in your union. You know,
yeah, the other unions weren't interested in whether it caused them any health issues or whether there was any other anxiety or stress. They just weren't interested. And it comes up with what the Unison rep said, is that they wouldn't represent because it wasn't Labour Party policy, because people forget that the Labour Party wanted stronger, harder, longer lockdowns and wanted more restrictions on people's rights. You know, they seem to think it was a conservative issue, and they've forgotten about the Labour Party wanted it harder. And that's why the other unions, specifically the ones that affiliate to the Labour Party, wasn't going to rock the boat because it's what they wanted.
We have to go to a break now, but I want to work for your union. It just sounds like what a union should be. As I said, in the 1980s, I worked in the National Union of Students, and there were aspects of what the NUS did, it still exists, that seemed genuinely principled, but they were pulled down by that same problem. They were overly closely connected to the Labour Party because Labour tended to get a majority on the ruling executive of the NUS. Now, actually, I still think there were some very good people there, and some of them remain friends to this day. But by and large, the unions in this country seem to be an extension of the Labour Party. So what Labour says, the unions do, and you don't. And that's a really interesting thing. I know this is turning, maybe some viewers will think it's a great big advert for the Workers of England Union, but that's my opinion. You don't have to join the Workers of England Union. It's a breath of fresh air to hear you saying these things because you put yourself in the line of fire in terms of state criticism. Sorry, go ahead, and then we'll go to break. Before we go.
Yeah, like I said, it was a big thing. We did stand out from the rest, but we only stood out because we wanted to make political statements or anything. Our whole issue was the members needed representation. You know, that's why sometimes you will have to interrupt me if I'm talking too much, because I do get very passionate about putting it forward, and I can go on and on and on. And the issue is, a lot of our reps, they are passionate about what they do and what they represent, and it's all about representing the employee, giving them proper representation. And the other unions just haven't done it.
Yeah, stop there, because we need to go to break. But after, when we come back, I want to really talk to you about the current political situation and how you think we get out of what seems to be a rather depressing state of affairs. I'm also going to introduce you to a new word that I learned yesterday while I was presenting, a word which is not rude, but it's unusual. It might describe your competitors. You're listening to the Lembotopic Show. I'm with Stephen Morris, who's from the Workers of England Union. We're going to go back to him in just a moment. This is TNT. See you in a few minutes.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Most people are unaware that bad bacteria can grow quickly in food that's stored, prepped, or cooked incorrectly, and that can lead to food poisoning. To avoid bad bacteria, always make sure your hands and cooking utensils are clean. Keep raw meat and chicken away from food that won't be cooked. Run your fridge at or below 5 degrees Celsius and use a meat thermometer to ensure your meat's being cooked to at least 75 degrees Celsius. For more tips on keeping bad bacteria at bay, visit foodsafety.asn.au.
You're with Lembotopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. I feel some nostalgia. We were talking about nostalgia before. There was a wonderful comment about nostalgia, but I can't find it now because I'd have to go all the way back up the chat. But there was a beautiful, beautiful quote about nostalgia. If it was you, and you know what I'm talking about, and I haven't read it out, then do put it back in, please, because I missed out there a little bit. We're talking with Stephen Morris from the Workers of England Union, who's making some really fascinating points about the way that union operates, which is different, a breed apart from the other unions, which are very closely associated with political parties. Before we go into some specific policy areas and how you think things could improve in this country, just a word about this political party affiliation business. Labour clearly was associated with the unions, because historically in the United Kingdom, it was the unions that supported the Labour Party in its early days. It's understandable. I get it. But you don't seem to have come up that pathway. And it seems to me, therefore, you have the luxury of independence. Do you lose out by not being associated formally with the political party the way the other many of the other trade unions are?
No, I did come up a different way. And I think you mentioned about the National Union students. I obviously, everybody who becomes a student at college or uni automatically gets enrolled. But I joined when there was all the miners' strike in the early 80s. And that actually put me off unions for a long while, because one of the issues was they were having a vote whether the student union should support the miners' strike or not. Now, the one thing that stood out for me was that Arthur Scargill, who actually wrote the rule book, said that you've got to have a national ballot to have a national strike, but they never called a national ballot. So to me, it wasn't valid, just under his own rule book. And they had a vote in our building, and it was clearly a vote not to support. But then the panel said, well, that's passed. And we're like, what do you mean it's passed? They said, oh, we've had meetings in other buildings. And we're like, what meetings? And it's passed. So that put me off unions. So I then went into retail and various things for about 15 years. So I was in, I was on the management side. But then in 2000, I went on public transport. And in 2003, they were looking for a new branch secretary. And I had people coming to me saying, Steve, can you do it? And I said, well, it does affect my job. Okay, I'll do it. And I joined Unite. And what an eye-opener that was. That's Unite was clearly not what I thought. There was a lot of backdoor dealings going on between senior officers and the directors. And it really, really rattled me. And me and the NC of our branch, we were all of similar views. We just didn't have it. And funnily enough, there's actually complaints going in now of underhanded dealings between the Unite and the company now again. But so I left in 2010 when this union was just being set up. And the idea was that this union would be purely independent of politics, independent from the employer. And that's what we always aimed to do. Now, for my own personal view, my own personal case, I was unfairly dismissed by that employer in 2014 because I raised a grievance on behalf of the members. And we eventually won that at the Court of Appeal in London, 3-0, which vindicated mine. But that was because I raised a grievance on behalf of the members, and then the company had gone after me. So that showed that really, we really do need independent representatives who can't be intimidated or dismissed for representing. And in 2017, I then became General Secretary of the Union. And yes, I do have my own views, but we're very conscious. People who know me in more detail will know that I'm very conscious about this union being completely independent. Because even as a manager, I worked on the basis that if I treated my staff right, they will either go the extra mile or do the extra work for me. Yes, there will be the exceptions. And if there's exceptions, then we need policies in place to deal with people who abuse, you know, your trust and confidence, or they take liberties with the sickness and absence. So you do need policies. But I'm of the management style that if you treat your staff right, they will treat you right. But most of our reps have had previous management experience, so we know when we're sitting in front of that manager, we know what they're coming with before they've actually said it, because we've been on that side of the table. You know,
that gives us
a unique view on it, where rather than somebody working on the shop floor who has just had a little bit of training under the union, who then is in front of managers who've had a lot more training by the company, who've got HR advice sat next to them, you know, it becomes very different. And most of our reps, in fact, all of them get an employment law book issued and we give them training. And even I'd show you now, but I can't because it's holding my laptop up. I have an employment law book that I still carry with me now, because sometimes it's kind of theatrics at times, because if I'm telling an employer something, they may not believe me. They think, oh, you're trying it on this. But then I'll pull the employment law book out of my bag and say, look, so they'll see this big, thick book, employment law book, and I'll quote it straight from the book. You know, to show that what we say is true. We're not trying to pull the wool over their eyes. So the way we operate does stand us out, you know, but the other unions should be doing this. And this is the annoying part. It goes back to what you're saying. Why aren't the other unions operating like this? It's really annoying because they could make so much difference in the workplace, not just to tell managers how they should be managing, but actually getting better the way the staff, not, and I don't always look at the way the staff are paid, but how they are treated. Sometimes you, if you treat the staff right, sometimes they, if they, the pay becomes kind of a secondary, as long as they've got enough, you know, live on, go on the holiday and stuff like that. Some staff are more than happy.
Do you know what this is the word I was going to share with you, and I doubt whether you'll have heard it before, but I love it. Do you know what a quokka wodger is? It's not rude.
No.
Quokka. I quote, I think it was just a bloke. Apologies if I'm giving the credit to the wrong person. I think it's just a bloke told me this yesterday while I was on air. A quokka wodger is a wooden toy figure that jerks its limbs when a string is pulled. One of those old toys.
The other unions.
Would you say the other unions are a quokka wodger or a bunch of quokka wodgers?
Yeah, they work very hand in hand with the people who they pay. And they pay, this is, you know, if we get into the financial side of it, this is the other annoying part, where not only do the other trade unions fund the Labour, obviously the Labour Party, you give loads of money to the Labour Party to give it to the individual candidates. But because they use workplace reps, the organisations have to register what's called facility time. So they have to gauge how much that workplace rep is costing that organisation in cost-wise. And some of these are costing the NHS trusts millions of pounds a year in what's called facility time. So the unions are getting subscriptions, they're paying the Labour Party, but then they're costing the NHS millions as well. But they don't give any money to the NHS. If they're getting subscriptions from these members and they're representing them, then they should give that money back to the NHS. So, but our reps, because they're independent, we don't cost the NHS anything in facility time. And again, this is a little bugbear because we, like I say, we don't cost the NHS, but the other unions get all these millions in subsidies, give them to a political party, yet at the same time costing the NHS millions in facility time.
I have to say that I just find your model very much more in line with how I live my own life, where I expect people to work with me on the basis of merit. I felt that way as an MP. I wanted to get elected on merit, not just because everyone was told to vote for my party. Guess the analogy is I would like unions to do well on merit, not just because everyone tells them that they have to be members because it's a closed shop or because everybody else is in it. Looking at the current political situation, and you've had your EGM, you had your meeting today, which is a very lovely place, by the way, where you are, I think. If you were to describe the mood amongst your colleagues at the event that you've been at this weekend, what is the prevailing mood in Workers of England Union about the state of British politics?
They're completely disenfranchised with the entire process. As we've seen, turnouts are getting lower and lower. They talk about reducing the age of voting to lower. And our members are like, well, what's the point of that? It's not about lowering the age. It's about engaging. It's about making people's votes matter. And we talk about democracy in the UK. We don't actually really have a democracy. Can, you know, when was the last time we had, we don't use a directly elected prime minister. We use a parliamentary system. And as we've seen, Rishi Sunak is one of the worst ones we've had, where he's not only did he not have a vote by any voter in the country, his own party didn't even vote for him. You know, Liz Truss, for all of her faults, and I don't think she had too many. I could understand what her aim was to get the economy going. But she had the vote of the party. You know, to me, to really engage people, we've got to have a directly elected prime minister. You know, they've been pushing these directly elected mayors around the country and directly elected police commissions, so they can say that, okay, you can affect your local area, but we don't have one for parliament. You know, and I think going forward we've got to try and engage, because I don't agree with a lot with George Galloway, but I think he just named the Labour and Tories as, say, you know, cheeks of the same ass, didn't he? I think he said.
Yeah, he did say that. But
no, people don't see a difference. And when they look at the others, Lib Dems have just not been there for a while. Reform seems to be the alternative, but Reform seems to be mainstream media stuff again, mainstream politics, just trying to take the Conservative vote. We need something to really engage people and to
It seems to me, I'm sorry to interrupt you, I'm just aware of the time. This is fascinating stuff, by the way. It seems to me that those unions make it impossible for them to negotiate evenly with all the parties because they're clearly associated with one party on the whole, which is the Labour Party.
Yeah.
And I suppose, thinking about this for the first time, to be honest with you, Stephen, you have the opportunity to be cross-party in terms of your access, because no party can say, well, you're with them.
Well, we did a few years ago try and get in negotiations with the Conservatives, and it was all to do with recognised trade unions. And we were trying to put a proposal forward, because you mentioned about closed shops. Closed shops have been illegal for years, but the way they use the recognised union process is still like a closed shop. And what we were saying was, do away with this recognised union, because one, we believe it is still operating as a closed shop, and two, it's a restrictive of where people can join. Make it open that any person can join any trade union. But obviously, from a manager's point of view, they don't want to be negotiating with all of them. Different points. So what you would have then is you would have a trade union committee. So anybody can join a trade union of themselves. Their representative would sit on this committee, and as a committee, you would go as one to the company. So the company's only dealing with one point. Conservatives, not interested. All they were bothered about, they said, no, we're business, Labour's workers, and that's it. And we said, they might have you're breaking up Labour.
They might have, and what did they say to that?
They just weren't interested. They said, no, we're business, Labour's unions, and that's the way we want it. They want a them and us. You know, we see this in politics all the time. There's a them and us, you know, and they're not looking at how, to us, if they'd have broke up the paymasters of the Labour, where other unions could go in and say, oh, I can be a member of whichever I want. I don't want to be a member of a union that pays to the Labour Party, but I want to get the same recognition.
I would say after the next election, if the Conservatives crash and burn, they might be more interested in talking to you then.
Oh, yeah.
But then Labour
yeah.
might be less interested.
They might need representation.
They might actually, maybe Rishi Sunak should join you now so that he can use the age-old phrase after his gives a job. You never know. He might need your help.
Yeah.
But they could hardly be described as unfair dismissal based on the way things have gone. No. Just a clarification. It was mingling, says Just a Bloke, who came up with the debate about Quokka Wodja yesterday. Credit where credit's due. Thanks for that. Lots of other discussion there. I haven't got time to go through it all. We've only got like half a minute left. So in 30 seconds, if you could change one thing, it's got to be really short. If you could change one thing in British politics now, what would you, as the Supremo at the Workers of England Union, want it to be? Just one thing in 50 words.
I would change to a directly elected Prime Minister. I think that's the only way you're going to engage people to say your vote actually counts. And they've got no argument because they've done it for police commissioners and mayors. And it would bypass the complete issue of parties swapping and changing leaders without people's voice being heard.
Stephen Morris, it could be you. Thanks very much indeed. Yeah. Really interesting to talk with you. That's Stephen Morris from the Workers of England Union. I found that interesting. They've been having their conference over this weekend. I wonder what you think. Do put it in the comments as well. Coming up next, I'm going to be talking about volcanoes and the eruption of trouble for the Greens in the UK, where things have been falling down around their shoulders. That's all going to be with Harry Wilkinson from Net Zero Watch. You're listening to the Len Bitopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. See you in a few minutes.